fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Insight Fire Training, LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighting cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2019 Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training, LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training, LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com, your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, here's their upcoming schedule. December 9, 2018, Insight Training LLC will be hosting an 8-hour live fire training event in cooperation with York County Fire Department. Instructors Andy Starnes, Terrence Shoemate, and Thomas Anderson will lead this session. Please contact Training Officer Omar Casso for registration details at area code 305-281-2222 or via email at omar.casso, K-A-S-S-O, at yorkcountygov.com. February 6th through the 8th, Texas Association of Fire Educators with Sean Blumaker of Max Firebox. More details to follow. February 12, 2019, Tactical Thermal Imaging, Enhancing Fireground Strategies and Tactics, sponsored by FD Tactics Training. Details to follow. February 28, 2019, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., Max Firebox Burn and Learn Thermal Imaging Training at Mount Pleasant Volunteer Fire Department in North Carolina with instructors Terrence Shoemate and Thomas Anderson. Details to follow. March 6th through 9th, 2019, Louisiana Instructors and Firefighters Training Conference. The registration opened November 1st. Brotherhood on the Bayou will host some amazing fire service leaders, Mike Dugan, Mark Von Appen, Sean Blumaker, and Andy of Max Firebox and KTF. Don't miss this one. We will be teaching 7 4-hour sessions from the 6th through the 9th. April 9th through 13th at FDIC 2019, a general conference presentation that will cover this often confusing and complex areas of thermal imaging from purchasing to policy. This is not a sales presentation. It is an educational program that is designed to assist firefighters in understanding the specifications of fire service thermal imaging camera and how that will affect their ability to perform on the fire ground. Insight Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great promotional partners, the Firehouse Tribune. The Fayard Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on duty and off, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Welcome to this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. I'm your host, Steve Green. We hope you're all well and having enjoyed a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday with those you love and friends. We'd like to remind you, you can find our entire library on our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv, as well as on your favorite podcast streamer like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Listen Notes, etc. Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. Today, we are very pleased to once again welcome good friends of the show and great workers for the fire service in helping us with our health problems, and that is Dr. Alberto Cabarn-Martinez and Dr. Natasha Schaefer-Sol. Dr. Cabarn-Martinez is a board-certified osteopathic physician, occupational epidemiologist, and assistant professor of public health sciences at the Sylvester Comprehensive Care Center of the University of Miami. His program of research investigates how the firefighter work environment increases cancer risk and develops interventions to reduce carcinogenic exposures. And Dr. Schaefer-Sol is a nurse scientist with research interests in cancer disparities and occupational health. Her research at the Sylvester Firefighter Cancer Initiative includes documenting the cancer burden in the Florida Fire Service, integrating new methods of workplace cancer screenings, and evaluate workplace interventions to reduce cancer risk. To both of you, I say welcome back, and I'm so pleased to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity, Steve.
Well, it's our pleasure, and I thank you again for your donating some time to the podcast and so we can update our listeners. And as you're probably well aware, just about a month ago, the state of Florida put forth a $1 million grant to allow and create special on-scene gross decon buckets with supplies to be given to each Florida fire department that applied for the grant. There was no cost to the department. They just had to apply for the program. And I was able to see the first bucket actually at a demonstration during a recent grade 2018 Florida Fire School. And it was interesting to see, but in the discussions I had with firefighters there, some were very aware of the cancer initiative. Some were just maybe had heard of it and weren't that concerned about it. And some had already seen that their departments had received the buckets to start gross decon. And so what I'd like to start with, Alberto, is could you tell us, give us a review of where we were back in March at our first meeting that we had together, and how you think we've progressed and what has happened? Then we'll ask Natasha, because of her specific involvement in Florida, what we see here, and then we'll expand it maybe in the second segment to what you're seeing in the national level. So Alberto, if you would please.
So Steve, thank you again for having us both and to provide your listeners with an update on the work that's been going on here at the Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center through the Firefighter Cancer Initiative. There's actually been a lot of wonderful work that has been continuing since we last met in March, as well as some new initiatives that the Cancer Center has been supporting for our Florida firefighters. Since we last met in March, thanks to new state funding, we've been able to continue the work on all different types of aspects of research and screening services for our Florida firefighters. Most recently, and I'm really glad you mentioned sort of the decontamination buckets, which I'll ask my colleague, Dr. Sali, to talk a little bit about that. is really an opportunity to increase the conversation and cultural awareness about the importance of decontamination on scene, as well as using practices. One of the projects I'll mention to you in just a little bit within the hour is about a study we did with fire department here in Florida, looking at the measurement of gases in the warm zone of firefighters, as well as using personal protective equipment while operating within the warm zone. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Dr. Sally, because she's been leading her and Dr. Kovitz the effort on the decontamination buckets is much more insightful than I am on it.
Oh, thank you. So, so with the decon buckets that you saw, that was a grant that was given to the State Fire Marshal's Office, and they worked very closely with us to really figure out a game plan of what to do with that money that's going to reach as many firefighters as possible.
Sure.
And so what we came up with was these decon buckets, because in the past, you know, you could get second sets of gear for maybe one department or a couple of extractors for a few departments. And we really wanted to reach the entire state. And so with that, we partnered with other leaders of firefighters in the state to help us design what goes into these buckets and what's needed for gross decon on-scene gross decon. And so with this creation, we created the survey, we created everything, the list of what is needed in each bucket, as well as an SOG, and as well as digital materials that anyone that receives the bucket that they can download for their department to teach the gross decon. And so there was a total of 5,400 buckets that went out throughout the state of Florida to over 500 departments, you know, with the goal that every fire apparatus in the state of Florida will have one of these buckets. So not only do they have now the resources to do gross decon, but really the knowledge and the awareness of what's going on. Because as you mentioned, some departments are very aware of the cancer epidemic in the fire service, and some are very, you know, they're just learning about it.
Right.
So it's really about sharing the knowledge and providing the resources to these departments, not only in the big urban cities, but also the rural areas and the volunteer departments.
I think that one of the things I noticed in most of the Floridas, firefighters, had come from, for this program, had come from Florida, though we had a couple from New Jersey, and even, I remember, at least one from Pennsylvania. One of the things I found is that some of our Florida firefighters had heard about the bucket. Now, they were just coming out at the time of the school, which was the third week of October. And as I said, we were able to have a demonstration of one bucket. One was actually presented to the person who is actually chairs the Great Florida Fire School, Robert Amick. As a matter of fact, he had been delayed to get there because he was up with his family. They went up to the peninsula after Hurricane Michael to help up in the problems subsequent to the hurricane there, and then came back. And one of the things that the State Fire Marshal's Office did was present him with one of these buckets as a symbol of his understanding of what we're up against and what we do every day. However, a lot of the firefighters still were having a tough time understanding how dangerous the occupational cancer rates are in not just Florida, but across the country. Through my research for my class, I did a lot of work on the Boston Fire Department. That's my hometown. I can't leave them out. And the great work that they did together with, I'm sure, your good friends at Dana-Farber. I grew up there when Dana-Farber was still just the Jimmy Fund. I used to go around collecting on Halloween with a little bucket for money for the kids at Jimmy Fund. And of course, has grown into the beautiful and wonderful Dana-Farber Institute. Actually, my mom, may she rest in peace, when she was diagnosed back in 1997, was treated at Dana-Farber at the Framingham, which was my hometown then, which has now become a city, but at their Framingham office. And the care she received was wonderful. So they've always held a dear place in my family's heart. But again, I think Boston has made, and New York, Phoenix, LAFD, and LA County have made wonderful efforts in really getting the message out to their firefighters. So that's very difficult when you look at those urban areas to find one of their firefighters who at least has not been educated about the dangers of occupational cancer in the fire service. But yet, we're still finding so many others who are not. One of the things I found was I created a diagram for my class which mimicked the hazmat diagram, which was the epicenter was the incident, which was the hot zone. Then we come out a certain distance, we have the warm zone, and then we come out further, we have the cold zone, and then we have the emergency services to whisk away the victims. And we use the same thing. Yet some of us talked about how often they're in the warm zone. They're not wearing, they may be wearing their bunker gear, but they're not wearing their SCBA. The driver engineers are most often just wearing their regular station clothing. They, depending on the weather, of course, if they're up north, they may be wearing a heavier jacket, a bunker coat. But with just one little turn of the wind from one direction to other, they can find themselves from being in the cold zone to, at the very least, the warm zone. And yet, most of them won't even accept an N95 face mask because they feel that it alters their ability to do their job. How do you see us breaking through this wall of, I'm not going to say resistance, although part of it is resistance, but I think it's just better education. Like you said, you've done a great job here in Florida to the point where you, with your work and effort with the State Fire Marshal's Office and the Chief Financial Officer's Office, were able to provide these buckets for gross decon to every department that wanted one for each of their apparatus here in Florida. How do we get that same enthusiasm in the states and in the departments to open up their eyes to what we're really facing, just the way Boston did in their tremendous video, which is Boston Fire Department Fighting Back, which our listeners can find on YouTube, just see BFD Fighting Back. And it's a video that tears at your heartstrings, but it also shows you how determined they were to beat the problem of occupational cancer in the Boston Fire Department. How do we spread this?
So I think that is a great question and something that we realized early on that, you know, some departments that we work with are, you know, they know a lot about the cancer epidemic, and then there's others that really have no idea. But in the same token, there are fire service members that are part of these large departments that know a lot, that, you know, not everyone in their department knows everything that's going on. So what we've actually done in the last 2 years is we've created a cancer prevention curriculum using a hybrid model. So really talking about what the risk of firefighters are, what the exposures are, you know, every little material that burns, what are possible things that are off-gassing that firefighters are being exposed to. So really giving them information about their cancer risk. And then talking about ways to decrease this risk or reduce their exposure to these different carcinogens. And so with that, we've created videos, different modules, case studies for firefighters that we've taught firefighters, and then they'll be able to take it to their department to teach the other members. And in, with some of these videos, it includes some footage of survivors that have been diagnosed with cancer, very similar to what you're talking about with the Boston video. But then we also have a video that has, you know, I would say kind of gone a little bit viral, where we are showing using invisible dye as a, you know, representing the soot and how it travels from an incident to the bunker room, to the kitchen, and how it could spread when you put your gear into your personal vehicle.
Ooh, that sounds good.
So it's a really great educational piece that has shown to be pretty powerful, that has really reached people outside of the state of Florida, throughout the country, and actually also internationally. And so we hope with these videos that it will increase the knowledge and the awareness of the cancer risk. And then additionally, we are creating two new videos to show the gross decon procedures, as well as to show how the procedures after you gross decon that you can go back into a fire and still be safe. Because that's a question that always comes up, that if they do gross decon after an incident and they only have one set of bunker gear, you know, what is their risk of getting steam burned if they go back into another fire. And so we are showing a video that Palm Beach County has already completed, but we're going to be doing something a little bit different, but using the same model to show that, you know, you can do gross decon and your safety is not at risk.
Right. Well, I think that's one of the things that we stressed at the class last month was the fact that we can do all this, how important it is, and yet you can still go, you know, sometimes if you're in a big urban city, there's more of a chance that maybe after you finish a big working fire that you may get, and you're on your way back to the station, you may get banged out again for another working fire. But most departments, suburban and certainly rural departments, that really happens. But we addressed that same issue. We didn't have the video, but we addressed the same issue that, number one, the decon does not include a heavy soaking of the water. That's why a special nozzle was included. That right. was its proportion was measured, so that'd be enough to take the soot off, but it wouldn't permeate deep into the fabric. And to avoid that, if they did have another call on the way back to the station, or if they had to go back into that very fire, they would not have to risk steam burns. I think, again, which comes from somebody's imagination from comparing our bunker gear and what we're trying to do today to maybe what it was even just 10, 15 years ago. I know that back 30 years ago when I was in it, if you got your bunker gear pretty soaked, it was soaked. But that was then. And that has all changed and evolved, just as every other tactic in firefighting has evolved over the years to face the new challenges that come. Let me ask you this, Dr. Soli. Are any of these videos available online for listeners to go and see besides the Boston video?
Yes. Yeah, so you could actually go to Sylvester New Badge of Honor.
Okay,
and so what we have there is all of our educational videos and materials that our team with the Firefighter Cancer Initiative has created. So you just go in and you're able, there's multiple videos, but the die video that I was speaking of is on there.
Is that a website?
There's also, yes, the Sylvester New Badge of Honor is a website.
.com.org?
.com.
Okay.
Just so I can sorry about that, yeah.
That's all right. I'll put it on the our website so I can send our viewers over there.
And the way that we've sort of, you know, organized it so that it's the Sylvester New Badge of Honor is to remind our firefighters that, you know, it is the real honor here is, you know, having clean gear, similar to what a physician or a doctor would have to do to go clean into a operating room.
Sure.
You know, the same thing is for firefighters. Make sure that you're clean so that you don't contaminate yourself and others in the process of, you know, doing fire suppression and rescue.
Right. And part of this, I think, is, but again, after talking with these firefighters and watching numerous live videos that are on there's a phone app. I don't know if it's on Android, but on iOS, on Apple iPhones, there's an app called Periscope. And on Periscope, I call them sidewalk camera people. There's a fire, and they'll start shooting and broadcasting live, and it records it for a bit, and you can go back and look at it. But I've noticed so many times, and this is one of the problems that one of the firefighters brought up in my class, is that they don't see the officers fulfilling what's necessary for protection. They're not wearing their full PPE. They're not wearing SCBA. They're in the warm zone and hot zone. I saw a video out of Pennsylvania where the firefighters were just putting their APEX on at the front door where the fire was coming out of already at the top of the door. They were just putting their hoods on then and their SCBA masks. A white-hatted chief, I don't know what, I couldn't see if it was deputy, assistant, or the full chief, but was walking with his bunker gear open, wearing no SCBA, walking back and forth into the warm zone, hot zone. Now, he was right there when they opened the front door with that fire coming out, with their hose ready, in the hot zone, then back to the warm zone. And in the course of maybe 4 or 5 minutes, he must have walked back and forth 3 or 4 times. So one of the firefighters said, not specifically to this video, but it said, well, we don't see the officers doing it. So why are we going to bother if they don't do it? You know, we want to get in there and fight the fire. And I tried to explain to them that if you want to be able to continue to fight fires and be healthy enough to do so, if they're not doing it, don't use them as the example. If you know the information from what we're teaching here, and you've heard of it before, and your department has applied to get the decon buckets, even if your chief or assistant chief isn't doing it on the fire ground, you do it. Because this is for you and your colleagues and your family and your loved ones. This is for you. So if they're not setting the example, you set the example and show them that you've learned what this can do and you want to help prevent it. So you observe the protocols.
And Steve, I very much share your sentiment and your echo, and I think that's one of the hardest things that we've encountered in the last 4 years doing this type of research, which is the culture that's within a fire department, and, you know, how do you go about changing it? I think for us as scientists and as clinicians, we try to think about, you know, stepwise approaches to informing and creating that awareness. Earlier in the top of the hour, we talked a little bit about that new study we just published looking at warm zone exposures. Like you mentioned about wearing SCBA or gas detection, you know, a lot of the things that we're dealing with particularly with cancer, have a long latency period. And so we don't expect to see these cancers in our firefighters till late in their career or even during retirement. And so for like Dr. Sally and I, the goal is to try to prevent that from ever even happening to begin with so that they can enjoy their full retirement. So trying to be able to show them, you know, early on in their career as rookies or mid-career firefighters, the importance of these decontamination challenges can be challenging, you know, and why do we have to do things a little bit different than we were? It reminds me a lot like in the 1980s when we had the HIV epidemic and we all started having to use universal precautions to not have blood exposures. It's the same thing today with the soot. We really got to show our firefighters, even though you don't see it immediately, that soot is causing, you know, changes at the cellular level. That new study we just published with one of the departments here in Florida, we did some case studies and we empowered them with Draeger devices to be able to do multi-gas detection while, for example, the linemen and the engine operator are operating in the warm zone. And they had, thankfully, low levels of exposure as per the instrumentation that was measuring the gases on the vapors, but there's still exposures. There's still low levels of exposure. So while they're permissible by OSHA, imagine your full career, you know, 30 years, 40 years in the fire service and having these low exposures over time. They can add up, you know, they're cumulative. So you may not see it right away within a year or two, but long term, you know, it's going to affect you and get cancer. So we're hoping some of this data creates a conversation piece with the firefighters about the importance of, you know, doing detection and monitoring, because oftentimes we've seen they just have like maybe a carbon monoxide meter on their medic bag and that's it. And you really don't know the full scope of the gases and vapors you're exposed to on scene, as well as using at least like half masks or something, that not even if it's full SCBA, but something to protect your respiration and dermal absorption.
Right. And that's why we had suggested, several of us were suggesting N95s for the engineers who are always going to be basically in a warm zone. They'll never really be in the cold zone because they're still too close from where the engine is stationed most of the time. They're still going to be in a relative warm zone to where the incident is. And so we suggested if you just wear an N95, it's better than wearing nothing at all. Some of them said, well, that, you know, maybe that makes sense, that maybe that's something we could do with our department. They said it all depends on that call and where the apparatus is stationed. You know, if that particular apparatus is maybe third or fourth due in a station almost a quarter mile away, then it may not be important at that moment that the driver has to wear the N95 mask. But if you're right in front of a home that's has a working fire, then it's probably going to be in his or her best interest to, at the very least, wear their bunker gear and to wear an N95 mask. In the same way that if the wind was blowing, they might even wear goggles just to protect their eyes so they don't get the soot gnash in their eyes. Then if you can wear the goggles, you can wear the N95, at least as a first-level barrier to any danger from that. What I want to do is I'm sorry, go ahead, Doc.
No, I was just going to mention, and I apologize for interrupting. The other thing that we've noticed is also wiping down on scene, you know, at a minimum, if you have sort of wipes to remove any soot around the neck or on the skin surfaces is helpful as well. you know, because as long as that soot is sort of laid in on top of your skin, it could be potentially absorbed. So I agree with you that any sort of safety measures or safety precautions that could be done while there. And I also wanted to mention, Steve, just related to it, that it's not just about our career firefighters and our volunteer firefighters, but this goes the same for our fire trainers and for our arson and fire investigators, mm-hmm. where sometimes even in their, you know, workflow and their scenarios, they might even have higher exposures because they're sort of doffing on post-fire materials that could be, you know, still off-gassing, maybe even at higher concentrations. So I really feel like, you know, a lot of this decontamination culture and evidence really should trickle down across all of these different subgroups.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. I want to close this segment with a personal story and the fact that I just went through about 5 weeks of a, I won't say a scare, but a heightened awareness of this problem. I had labs done the beginning of October and my platelets were down. And so the doctor recommended I see an oncologist. And I had an oncologist who studied right where you are at UM. He did all his work at UM, his graduate work there. And he's here in the greater Northwest Broward area. And I was able to meet him through a dear friend who I lost, but a dear friend and his wife asked me to go with them to the visits. And we kind of hit it off together because of my firefighting and medical background as well. And so I had seen him once before for a different reason, from a bad reading on on an MRI report that the radiologist had made a mistake with. But this time I went to him again for this. We decided to do a bone marrow aspiration, and we did it. And I asked him this question: if this comes back positive, would you think that it would be reasonable to think that this could be from my fire career, you know, 35 years ago? He says, I wouldn't doubt it for a moment. He says, what I've been seeing and learning, I could not say no. I couldn't say yes definitively, but I would say, is there a likelihood? He said, yeah, very, very much so. I'd be very surprised if it wasn't. Thank goodness the results came back and I was fine. But for those 2 weeks that I was waiting for those results, I was thinking about everything I taught just 3 weeks before. And the passion that I have to teach this and get this message out on the podcast. If for those of you who don't think that it can happen to you, I'm telling you, don't believe that. Don't let that blind you to the realities of what we're facing today in the fire service. And we have these two great doctors with us who are studying this and working their hearts out to help firefighters in Florida and across this country, as our other cancer centers, as I mentioned, Dana-Farber. And there are many others doing the same thing to help out. But you have to do one thing first, folks. You have to open your mind to the possibility that this is your work environment and this is what you're exposed to. And as Dr. Caban-Martinez just said, their work is to get through the culture in the fire service. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in just a moment. So we'll be right back, right after these words. Don't go away. No matter where we live, or no matter the season, there is always work to be done that makes us sweat. Just how can we keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel and pre-moistened with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Just open your cool towel pack, remove the towel and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neck like a kerchief. Wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times again, and Cool Towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your cool towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your cool towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowel.com or call 1-800-918-8255. 8323. Remember, you're going to work and you're going to sweat. Make Cool Towel your answer to keeping cool. The tones sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. That was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE, bunker pants, check, turnout coat, check, hood, check, gloves, check, escape line, check, SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the red crosslay, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy's behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on. That SCBA is really a pain, right? Strap it on, then the mask. Jeez, plenty of guys used to fight fire without them. Why can't I? Well, meet my little friends. Arsenic, asbestos, benzene, benzopyrene, diesel exhaust, formaldehyde, polychlorinated biphenyls, polychlorinated dibenzopidioxins, vinyl chloride, 1,3-butadiene, and chronic hepatitis B and C virus. That's right. When you don't wear your full PPE, including your SCBA, you're inviting these little buggers into your innermost parts. They bring multiple cancers, including kidney, liver, prostate, testicular, and lung, plus multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, leukemia, and much more. And if you don't decon, where you go, they go. Hey, honey, better set the table. I'm bringing some friends home for dinner with you and the kids. Smarten up. Wear your full PPE and SCBA for you and for them. Welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And there could not be more important news for firefighters and other first responders as well as what we're bringing you today about the Firefighter Cancer Initiative. Our guests today are wonderful supporters and friends of this show and of the effort. And that's Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez and Dr. Natasha Schaefer-Soul from the University of Miami Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Centers. And they are both actively and devotedly working on the project of the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, Occupational Cancer in the Fire Service, both here in Florida and with other cancer centers across the country, because this is not just localized here. Dr. Soul, you just had some information from a previous survey that was done that I think is very important we share with our listeners.
Talking about our annual cancer survey, so this is one of the projects that we started from day one, really to get a better understanding of firefighters, their risk behaviors, their screening behaviors. And so since we've last seen you or spoken with you, we're actually up to over 3,500 active firefighters that have completed this survey throughout the state of Florida. So when we started in year one, we really focused on South Florida. In year two, we moved up to Central Florida. And in the last year, we've covered the entire state from the Panhandle all the way down to Monroe County. So to date, we have over 70 departments that have participated in this survey. And some of the preliminary data that has come out that we've actually published in Dermatology showed that there was an increased incidence rate of melanoma compared to the national average. So our sample had a 0.7% incidence rate, where the national average was 0.01%. And then the other significant information that we found was that those who were diagnosed at a much younger age. So our sample, the average age of diagnosis of melanoma was 42, where the national average is 64 years old. Some other information that we found related to their cancer prevention behaviors, I guess you can say, were those who had had a cancer diagnosis in the past were more likely to wear sunscreen or wear protective, you know, hat, shirt. So our goal this year, you know, by seeing this information is to really educate firefighters on, you know, being more cognizant on wearing sunscreen, wearing hats, especially when they're on duty. A lot of times, and what we see in our survey, is those who don't burn easily, if they have olive skin, they feel like, oh, I don't burn, so I don't need to wear sunscreen. So we're learning that, you know, that piece needs to really be pushed out there a little more. And Alberto can talk a little bit more. Another abstract or paper that we have out there right now is looking at disparities in cancer screening between Hispanic and non-Hispanic firefighters.
Yeah, absolutely. So the data that Dr. Shelley is presenting on is really cool because it's data from current active firefighters. Like she mentioned, we're using data from the project called the Annual Cancer Survey. It's great. Part of this Firefighter Cancer Initiative, and it's that cohort of Florida, and they fill out this baseline survey and follow it up. In addition to the paper of skin cancer that Dr. Sali just reported, this one that I'm going to mention to you now is looking at sort of the cancer screening behaviors. And this is really interesting to us from an occupational health and safety perspective, because we think of firefighters as a very unique, you know, community of patients, or as you know, a community of individuals we need to look at in a special way,
right?
Because of the risk that you're exposed to at the work site. We even sometimes argue within ourselves about the importance of maybe modifying cancer screening guidelines that, you know, should be done differently for our firefighters than the general Floridian. And that's because of the things that you're exposed to at work. The study that we published recently at the American Association for Cancer Research was looking at disparities in cancer screening between our Latino and non-Latino firefighters. As you know, in Florida, we sort of have a disproportionate population with a higher representation of minority Latino firefighters. And we noticed within them that their cancer screening behaviors tend to be lower than our non-Latino firefighters, particularly around the area of colorectal cancer screening. And those trends are consistent with what we see in the general Florida population, but the rates are lower than the Florida population. So it brings to mind that, you know, in addition to all the efforts that we're doing to increase awareness and culture change about decontamination practices, there could also be some efforts around how do we, you know, improve cancer screening access, utilization, and guidelines for our firefighters.
Right. Well, there's no doubt that we talked about the culture in the first segment, and that when you talk about melanoma, most of the kickback is going to be, well, we live in Florida, so we know, you know, we got a lot of sun, so we got to be careful about melanoma. It has nothing to do with firefighting. I think they just, again, it's what I said in my class, is that the elephant in the firehouse is spelled with three letters, E-G-O, ego. Because that's what gets in the way of the passion of being a firefighter. And
well, Steve, one of the things that is, and this is really important, I agree with you on the ego, but I want to remind your listeners that, yes, we live in the Sunshine State, but there are synergistic mechanisms that happen with sun and soot exposure, right? So, yes, because we're in the Sunshine State, we may have higher exposure to UV lighting, which is arguable in and of itself. But really the concern here from us as clinicians and as scientists is the idea that there's a combination between the actual exposure of the carcinogens you come across at work through rescue and fire suppression with sun exposure. Mm. And so it's really important that all of these happen in tandem and not as individual messages, because they can get lost. And even though the ego may be hard about, we live in Florida, remember that you can protect yourself. It's preventive. So just, you know, make sure you wear your sunblock and that you decontaminate when you're on scene.
Right. And the numbers that we shared with you, the incidence rate of our sample, not only was it high for the national average, but it was also high compared to the Florida average. So we were sure to look at both numbers because of that sentiment that people would say, like, well, it's the Sunshine State. So compared to people that live in the Sunshine State, it's still higher.
Right. All right. And again, those are the kind of numbers that we need in this educational process. We need to show the firefighters that they are in a special situation, and that besides the dangers that we know of, the dangers and risks we know of firefighting that are inherent in the job, and nobody's trying to lessen those whatsoever, but we've now discovered this other danger that is inherent in the job, and that we're trying to educate and help those who are still fighting fires to prevent their exposure or lessen their exposure to those items, those things that can cause occupational cancer in the fire service, that they may not see, as you mentioned earlier in the first segment, Alberto, they may not see, Natasha, they may not see that, you know, in the next 10 years, but when they get close to their retirement age or they retire, you know, it might be 3 months later that they're, all of a sudden they're diagnosed with some form of a cancer that was probably an occupational cancer, most likely. Not every cancer, you know, you can have had a successful long service in the fire department, and you could be diagnosed with a cancer at your retirement that had nothing to do with your fire service. But there's a good... go ahead.
Steve, I was just going to mention to your listeners, which may be useful, the Firefighter Cancer Initiative offers for free to all Florida firefighters the Personal Exposure Record app. When you mentioned about sort of our firefighters that retire and get cancer, that is sort of our experience. You know, the data that we talked about earlier, the annual cancer survey, the rate of self-reported cancer within the 3,500 plus firefighters is around 7%. So 7% sounds low for incumbent firefighters, but they are incumbent firefighters. These are firefighters that are young, you know, in their 20s and their 30s and their 40s, where we would not expect to have a high cancer rate. However, when you look at our aerial data, and aerial is the cohort of retired Florida firefighters that we're also following, the cancer rate is around 50%. So that means that almost half of the retired firefighters we've recruited into the retiree cohort report cancer. And unfortunately, when they retire, they really don't have really good records about what their, you know, exposure history is like. And so we took that message to heart. And at the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, we developed what we call the Personal Exposure. Any of your listeners can go for free to the website. It's per.miami.edu. So again, PER, the P stands for personal, the E is exposure, and R is record, .miami.edu. And you can enroll your fire department into this app, and you can use it to self-report any of your exposures and keep a record of it. So if you ever need information dating back to any type of, like, say, the 2014 large chemical fire you had or responded to, and you would like to report your symptoms, what type of decontamination procedures you did, what type of gases you came across, you'll have your own personal record that you can take with you anytime you go anywhere, to any fire department, if you move fire services. And it's a free system. I know in California, they have a similar one. I think they charge their firefighters about some nominal fee for an annual subscription. In Florida, using the funds from the state, we've been able to develop the system for free for our Florida firefighters.
Well, that's great. And I'm going to put that on the website. Again, folks, if you're listening, the website to get this exposure app is P-E-R, P as in Peter, E as in Echo, R as in Romeo, .miami.edu. And you'll be able to pick it up there. And I'm sure it's both for iPhone and Android. And you can start keeping a record. And you also mentioned something very important there, Alberto, and that is that one of the things that I learned in studying the Boston Fire Department's fight was that they're attributing a good number of the cancers they're finding in this plague of cancer, let's say, in Boston Fire Department. They were attributing to a major fire they had at one of the Boston Edison power plants. And some of the firefighters were talking about that there was stuff there. They didn't even know what it was. Their masks couldn't stay on because of this goop that was dripping onto their faces and all over the their equipment, their PPE. And so they were constantly adjusting their masks, which means, of course, they were exposed to this very thick, oily smoke. And if you've ever seen a fire in a transformer on the electric pole in your community, you'll know that that comes out with a very thick, oily black smoke. And a good number of the firefighters from Boston had been exposed to it. And a lot of these firefighters who had talked about their exposure were cleaned up. This was before the study, of course. But then when all these cancers started appearing, they were able to go back to see that a great majority of these firefighters were all on that call because it was such a major fire that they had, you know, over 100 firefighters, I believe, at that call. And so they traced it back to that. So this app, if you're at an incident where you feel that you've been exposed to all sorts of possible carcinogenic and toxic items, you'll be able to put them in this app. You go home, you go back to the fire, you clean up, and you start putting in your data. And you'll have a record. And as Alberto just said, it can go, even if you change fire departments, this is still your personal exposure app. And you'll be able to continue to record it until you retire. And you'll always have a copy of that available should you, God forbid, be diagnosed. And you can provide this to your physicians and let them have that information. And that's what's important to do. We have to document what is going on in the same way that Dr. Soli and Dr. Caban-Martinez are working hard to document the facts and the figures of firefighter exposure and firefighter cancer rates. If you can take this information to heart, you can begin your own way of preventing your exposure to cancer. There's an interesting commercial on television frequently. It shows this woman climbing up a giant hill of burnt cigarette butts. And it says that she quit some number of years ago. And she did it on her own, and she's climbing this to get the next level, which is care. She wants to be screened from this time forward. She was a smoker. Well, we can use that for the fire service as well, because there's nothing wrong with you if you think you've been exposed over a period of time, that you go to your physician. And I want to remind you that if you're a career firefighter, the IAFF and the IAFC have on their websites a sheet that you can download and take to your physician. And the National Volunteer Fire Council has a healthy firefighter information packet that you can download and take to your physician. And this way, when you go, you can present this card that basically says, "Hi, I'm Joe Smith. I'm a firefighter. And this is what I'm often exposed to." And let your physician start you on a screening program and doing tests. One of our other good friends of the podcast is Dr. Lance Walker. And Lance does over, and his company, SiteMed, they do over 2,000 firefighter physicals every year. One of the things they do is screenings. They have firefighters who have been with them for any number of years who now are on a constant yearly screening when they come in. And they bring information if during the previous year they were exposed to something new, and they bring that to their next physical. You can do the same. You can do the very same thing to help take care of yourself. And we have doctors like Dr. Caban-Martinez and Dr. Soli who are taking that information that's filtering down to them, and they are helping develop both the data that is coming in and putting that together in such a way that we can learn from it. And they put it out to all over the state. And luckily, thank goodness, they share it with us. And I'm sure they'll share it with other podcasts. And there's the Firefighter of Cancer Support Network. There's Cindy Ellen, her organization. Just all of a sudden, my head is blank. But all these organizations for firefighters who have been diagnosed with cancer, there are these support organizations there to help you, even if you're not, but you want to take the right steps. one of the other things that we talked about during the break, and unfortunately I wrote it down, but I can't find it on all my notes that I've been taking here. You have another study coming up. Is that correct?
That's right. So we actually have a national study now with FEMA. We fortunately received a new grant from the Federal Emergency Management Administration through the Department of Homeland Security to expand the National Firefighter Cancer Cohort Study. We're really pumped about this because traditionally, Steve, when you look at the scientific literature and the type of research that's been done, most of the work has focused on career firefighters. And we know that the firefighter workforce is really diverse. You know, we have fire trainers, fire investigators. We have wildland fire, wildland urban interface firefighting. And these folks have not been really well represented in the scientific literature. So through this new grant that Dr. Sally and I, with our colleagues at the University of Arizona, NIOSH, received in September, are going to be expanding a lot of the studies that we do here in the state through the Firefighter Cancer Initiative to these other subgroups. So we've now been able to develop our existing partnerships with Boston Fire, Tucson Fire, and Palm Beach County Fire, and expand them to these subgroups in California, Texas, Iowa, and Virginia. We're really pumped about this because it'll give us an opportunity to really take a lens into looking at these different subgroups. I'd encourage your listeners to learn more about this National Firefighter Cancer Cohort Study through the website, which is ffccs.org. So that's frankcharliesam.org. They'll find all the information about the national study, which is just got underway now in September. Hopefully we'll have some update for you what we're learning in the future. And it strikes me also, Steve, that you and your listeners may be also interested to know that our team put in a grant to NIOSH, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, to organize a national firefighter cancer symposium here at the University of Miami campus. It'll be June 9 and 10, which is Monday and Tuesday here on the Coral Gables campus. It'll be a national conference specifically on the topic of firefighters and cancer. Your listeners are welcome to join us. It's free registration. The details are materializing now. As we go forward, we'll share it with you and your listeners in case they're interested in attending in person, or we will also be streaming it live so that those that cannot fly here to Miami can join. We'll have a really wonderful panel of national and international scientists that will be talking about cancer in the fire service here in the United States and abroad, and what are the goal is to develop a roadmap for cancer research specific to firefighters and cancer, and you and your symposium here at the university.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, you know, you brought up something else that I forgot to mention. Our good friend, Executive Assistant Chief Todd LeDuc, was supposed to be part of this podcast today, but he was tied up with a conference call on his own. But one of the things that he has mentioned was, and you mentioned the international information as well, Todd was recently in Ireland and for the IAFC, and in talking with the Irish Fire Brigade, he talked with them about the cancer initiative, and he said that they're just beginning to pick up on it and to start acquiring more information and bringing that information to the firefighters. They know of the problem. It's just that it's just now becoming an issue that the national, since the departments are basically nationalized in most of Europe, that they're just beginning to address as a group. So one of the things that we've tried to stress, and you just said in the best manner possible, is that this issue is not something that's only happening in the United States. This is happening to firefighters across the world. Wherever we fight fire, because it's a we're a family, where we fight fire, wherever something is burning, from paper to oil to chemicals we can't even pronounce, that poses a risk to us as firefighters. So no matter what country you're in, no matter what department you're in, this is something that's part of your life right now. And it's going to be important for you to take an active role in the same way that you do anything else to help your health, to keep yourself healthy, to be able to do your job. This is what you have to do as well. So a symposium like this, and we'll keep you posted with it. We'll, as we get information from our good doctors here, we'll post it on the website to let you know the address for streaming in June for the National Firefighter Cancer Symposium. I think that's a great idea. I think to bring this out on a national level and be teamed with your other units that are working across the country, these departments that we mentioned that we all know have put in great efforts to help with the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, will be an excellent way for firefighters around the country and even for the public to learn a little bit more about what we do and what we face when we do it. Because it's more than, you know, most citizens don't really know the job we do. I think that when you mentioned bringing in the wildland and the urban interface wildland firefighters, we, over the last month, we've seen how dedicated these firefighters are to the job they do, because we just watched the terrible fires that took place over in California at the Camp Fire in Paradise in Northern California and the Woolsey Fire down in Southern California. And yet these firefighters were on the lines every day, every night, fighting fires. And if you happen to watch them, because these guys were in the woodlands especially, they can't be wearing, it's very difficult for them to wear SCBA packs. So they may wear face masks, but a lot of them don't. And all right. That soot, even though it's just nature burning, that you think is nature burning, still has chemicals and toxins in it that can hurt us. Now you take everything else that's burning, homes, cars, all sorts of, all manner of things that we don't even know were in these houses is burning. And that adds this, creates this toxic soup that they were exposed to. And so it's going to be important for these firefighters to be followed up with. And hopefully this national study is going to help them and for us to understand just what they face when they do this amazing job that most of us couldn't even think about doing ourselves. But they're out there on those lines, and we saw them on the news. So I think that's going to be a great turning point in this fight. I believe that as long as we can keep the education going, and as long as we can show that this is to protect and care for our firefighters, we're not trying to beat them out of a job. We're not trying to push them out. We're trying to protect them and protect their families as well. And that's what this whole effort is about. And I want to thank...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Doctor.
I was just going to say, I completely agree. You know, and it's really important, really critical for all different types of firefighters, regardless of, you know, their workflow and their activities, to just always be cognizant of these carcinogens in the workplace and try best to do these decontamination practices and do the healthcare screenings as needed. You know, please know that, particularly for our Florida firefighters, that you have a resource here with us. You know, we're really happy to be able to, share with you and your listeners as we learn the science of how we can best protect our Florida firefighters from the development of cancer.
Right. Well, we certainly appreciate it. And we want to give our thanks to Dr. Alberto Caban-Martinez and Dr. Natasha Schaefer-Soli for their time and the work that they do, that they're dedicated to the firefighters and the job we do to help keep us safe for ourselves, for our loved ones, and for the job that we love to do. So thank you very much. We appreciate you spending time with us today. Folks, we'll be right back right after these words. Please don't go away. You are listening to 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. You're ready to call it a night. The kids are tucked in, the lights are out, and the dog's in the den. Seems all is calm. But stop. It's not all right. To keep you and your family safe in the event of a fire, we're advising you to close before you doze. Close your bedroom doors when you go to sleep. Why? Because closed doors dramatically decrease heat and carbon monoxide levels, which provide trapped occupants more time for help to arrive. And Closed doors can slow the spread of the fire, increase oxygen levels, and decrease temperatures dramatically. You've invested in smoke and carbon monoxide alarms. You've practiced fire escape plans with your family. Now learn another important way to protect all of you. Close before you doze. Also remember, if you are able to escape, make sure the last one out closes the main door. Remember, close before you doze. This message is brought to you by the UL Firefighter Safety Research Institute, closebeforeyoudoze.org, your local fire department, and this podcaster. Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied you or teased you? Where did you most often turn to? Like many of us, you turned to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks like family illness, money, and job problems, and more. So where do we turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station house. You spend a lot of time with them, don't you? And most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy of your house of worship. But don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. This message is brought to you by this podcaster. He's been there and done it. Hi, this is Steve Green. If you're a regular listener to our show, you know that just a few episodes ago, we had Chief Victor Conley of the Irving, Texas Fire Department. Their department has begun a very strong blocking program using a piece of apparatus that was to be auctioned off, fixing up a little bit with additional lights and arrows, and using it on any emergency on an active roadway. And it is set up far enough away from the actual scene to be a great blocking tool to move traffic over. Again, we know we can't move all traffic over. But yet, in the last few weeks, there have been several serious accidents. In Dix Hills, New York, one of their engines was hit from behind. Four firefighters were shaken up. Thank goodness, we're not seriously injured. We've lost a firefighter who was killed in another accident on scene, and a tow truck operator, recovery operators we call them, killed on a scene recently. We must do everything we can to protect ourselves and our scenes from the distracted drivers that are all over the highways of America today. When you know that you're going to have calls on those active roadways, it is incumbent upon your department to develop a program for blocking that will keep all their firefighters safe. In Irving, Texas, their program came about due to a terrible accident where a tractor trailer came speeding down the road, hit a ladder truck, and destroyed it, injured four firefighters seriously, but thankfully, after a year, they were recovered enough and they were able to return to their work. You don't have to have a fancy piece of apparatus either, and it doesn't have to even be a piece of fire apparatus. Talk with your Department of Public Works in your community. See if they have an old big dump truck or snowplow truck that could be converted, that was going to be put up to auction because you didn't need it anymore. And see if with a small investment of a couple of $1,000, you might be able to add those lights and arrows, and that truck could be brought out as your blocking truck. The fact is that distracted driving is not going to end anytime soon. With that in mind, just as this show was all about fighting cancer in the fire service, We have to fight distracted driving in the fire service, and not only in the fire service. We have to protect our law enforcement brothers and sisters, our EMS brothers and sisters, and our recovery brothers and sisters. Everybody who works an emergency scene on active roadways has the right to be protected from distracted drivers. And I guess it falls upon us to do it, because that's who we are. We're the ones who run out there when everybody else is running away, and we go and do what needs to be done. So let's take it upon ourselves to protect not only our own comrades, colleagues, and members, but let's protect all those who help us do the job we do when we have emergencies on active roadways. You can contact Chief Conley at the Irving, Texas Fire Department. You can find out other information about it by contacting the Cumberland County Volunteer Firemen's Association. They have a website, respondersafety.com. You can go to that website and see videos, download information, even classwork on how to be safe on active roadways. So remember, this is what we are, this is the job we do, and we need to be protected when we're out there doing that job. Join up, become a blocking partner, and let's save lives together. And that's my view. We'll be right back. Ho, ho, ho! It's that holiday time again when many of us are trying to stretch every dollar to both purchase gifts for those we love and contribute what we can to the needy. This year, why not accomplish both by visiting the Five Alarm Task Force storefront with our friends from Teespring? Just head over to our site at http://bit.ly/DalmatStore with a capital D, capital S, all one word, and choose from our several t-shirts, each with a different message on the back, or one of our emblazoned mugs. Both items come in multiple colors. The good folks at Teespring will wrap them all up and send it to the address of your choice. Once you've ordered your merchandise, you can be comforted by the thought that a portion of the net proceeds of all the merchandise sold is donated to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. This wonderful organization helps the families of those firefighters who have made the ultimate sacrifice. What a great way to spread some holiday joy for them. So purchase some Sharp 5 Alarm Task Force gifts and help a very special charity as well. From all of us at 5 Alarm Task Force, have a safe and joyous holiday season. Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments, and that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You'll be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer, sure. It takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. And that wraps this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. We'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez and Dr. Natasha Schaefer-Soli, for joining us to discuss the progress in fighting cancer in the fire service. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and most podcast streaming services? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsor, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2018 Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at cause_origin, and on Facebook at /dalmatprod or /dalmatprodfire. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog at our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home.